This episode of She Explores is sponsored by BetterHelp. BetterHelp offers online counseling and therapy with licensed therapists from wherever you are and around your schedule. It is so important to talk about mental health. It's why we dig deep and discuss the hard stuff on this podcast. But even so, it's not always easy to ask for help when you need it. BetterHelp makes therapy more accessible. They offer 4 communication modes with licensed therapists: text, chat, phone, and video. So if therapy has been top of mind for you, but you didn't think it was something that you could do with your schedule or with your insurance, it might just be possible through BetterHelp. We have a special offer for you all. Try BetterHelp free for 1 week and start communicating with a therapist in under 24 hours. So if it has been on your mind, go to betterhelp.com/explorers to get started. That's betterhelp.com/explores. And we thank them for sponsoring this podcast. Please note, BetterHelp is not a crisis line. So if you're feeling suicidal, please call 911 or the National Suicide Prevention Line, 1-800-273-TALK. But if you're looking to talk with a licensed therapist from the comfort of your own home, go to betterhelp.com/explorers. This episode of She Explores is also brought to you by Ubiome. Your gut is home to trillions of microbes, about as many as the amount of human cells in your body. These microbes may affect your health in countless ways. They might help you digest food, manufacture vitamins, improve your mood, or even fight off illness. So you've got a whole world to explore, but is your gut keeping up? You can find out with Smart Gut by Ubiome. SmartGut is a quick and easy at-home test that helps you understand if your gut bacteria are working with you or against you by screening for microbes associated with IBS, IBD, and many other chronic conditions. Sampling is quick and easy. It takes less than 3 minutes. SmartGut is also healthcare provider ordered and reimbursed by most health insurance. Request your SmartGut test today. Just go to ubiome.com/explorers. That's ubiome.com/explorers. And we thank them for sponsoring the podcast. I'm Gail Straub, and you're listening to She Explores. A note before we get started, this episode contains reference to rape, trauma, and includes some light swearing. If you need help related to a sexual trauma, you can call the National Sexual Assault Telephone Hotline at 1-800-656-HOPE. Okay, on with the show.
And if anything, like, I posted one before and after, and it was just like, so I could see it for myself and understand this is what emotional trauma can do to my body, as opposed to like, I was bigger then and that was bad and now I'm smaller and that is good. It was just like, no, this body had unresolved trauma. This one's worked through its shit. That's the only difference.
This is Sydney Williams, and she's talking about 2 photos taken about a year apart that she posted to her Instagram. It's reminiscent of those photos you see on magazine covers when you're waiting in the checkout line at the grocery store. In one, she's around 60 pounds heavier than the other. But Sydney doesn't want to be a weight loss story. In fact, much of the weight she carried was invisible.
I don't want to apologize for my existence, but I don't want to discredit that either.
Sydney, before and after, has value and is worthy of love. It seems so obvious when you say it out loud. There is no good or bad in her story, just Sydney. And for us, Sydney's story starts on the Trans Catalina Trail on Catalina Island, 22 miles off the coast of Southern California. The Trans Catalina Trail stretches 38.5 miles across the island end to end. In the past 2 years, Sydney has hiked it twice with her husband. The first time she hiked it, in certain ways, she's the Sydney of the before photo.
The Trans Catalina Trail was my first backpacking trip ever. Back in the day, in 2016, my husband and I had just survived like the worst 2 years of our life together so far. Worst 2 years of my life, period. And we were like, we need to be outdoorsy. And outdoorsy for us was like day hikes and occasionally a margarita on a patio. So we found the Trans-Catalina Trail, and I hadn't been doing any kind of physical activity for like the past 2 years. So I literally like woke up, rolled into an REI, got the things I needed, and then we rolled onto the trail like it was no big deal. And it was the worst physical experience of my life and the hardest thing I've ever done. But it was like, it started this incredible journey that I'm on now, so I can't complain. But the first time was definitely the hardest thing I've ever done physically.
Hmm. And you said the previous 2 years had been the hardest 2 years of your life. What was it about those 2 years?
Well, okay. So I'm just going to like rattle off some stuff that happened between 2014 and 2016. The year 2014 started with my friend Chris, who was a high intelligence military veteran, spoke 6 or 7 different languages. And at the beginning of 2014, he took his own life. My uncle, who had previously survived brain cancer once, died of brain cancer. My best friend died on a base jump. And then at that point, I was like, maybe I should count how many friends and family members I've lost since I started skydiving, because at the time I was still skydiving. And I stopped counting at 15 friends that I had lost in the 4 years I was in the sport. I was like, okay, well, this is ridiculous.
Ugh.
So that was just that part. And then also in 2014, my skydiving teammate injured herself, and it looked like we weren't going to be going to nationals that year. So that pretty much ended my competitive skydiving career. And then when I got back from Adam's funeral, I found out that my boss, at the time I was working at a drop zone skydiving center in Southern California. And I got back from Adam's funeral and I found out that my boss, who was also my coach, who was also my teammate, and who was also my mentor in the sport, and him and his wife were friends of mine and my husband's, I found out that he was convicted of raping his 14-year-old niece.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So at the end of 2014, I lost my favorite sport. I lost my skydiving team and I left my dream job.
How did you rebound from, not rebound, that's such an awful word, but like, how did you move forward from that?
Well, so as the PR and marketing person at that particular business, and since he was the owner of the business, I was like, well, as a woman, as a person with an intact moral compass, I will not stick around here to clean up this mess, regardless of whether or not this is my dream job, regardless of whether or not I have dreams to be a world champion skydiver. First and foremost, I cannot continue to work here and I will not clean up this mess. So after I left, I started my own event planning company in the skydiving industry because I had a lot of unfinished business. At that point, I was like, well, screw this. I can do this better and I can do it by myself. And, you know, like I got things to prove. So I started that business at the end of the year in 2014. I did 3 skills camps for the skydiving community and then ended and closed that business with my friend Adam's memorial skydive. I was like, I think this is fitting. I've proven all I need to prove. The events I did were wildly successful and sold out within days of listing them. And I, at that point, I felt confident that I had like tied that up with a pretty bow. So once we released Adam's ashes over that drop zone in the sky, that was the end of my time in that sport entirely. I signed off after that.
Yeah. You're ready to move on.
So ready. Yeah.
Sydney eventually went back to the marketing agency she'd been at before she left to work and compete as a skydiver. She needs some stability after closing a business, especially when her husband had to start over himself after being let go from his job as a professional skydiver. Needless to say, they'd had a lot of turmoil in their work and personal lives. The end of 2016 was the right time for a long hike.
Fast forward the next year, we were like, something's got to change. We need to shake shit up. And that's what led us to the trail.
And the hardest thing physically you'd done, even though you were an athlete in college and you were obviously an athlete in the sky. I don't even know how to describe that.
Right, but. Yeah. Yeah, it was the hardest thing I've ever done physically. So I was on the women's rowing team at the University of Kansas. And then after that, I just kind of started like eating and drinking my feelings. And while I was athletic as a skydiver, yes, I still like, I didn't do anything for the 2 years after I lost that dream. Like I was just like drinking wine bottles like it was my job and burying feelings with Ben and Jerry's and just like doing everything I could to survive that chapter of my life. So yeah, when I roll, I mean, like we literally rolled out of bed and just got on that trail, and it was brutal. It's really, really hard.
Yeah, you're certainly not numbing anything.
No, yeah, definitely not. And that was actually one of the coolest lessons between the first trip that we did and the second trip, was just understanding how the trail affected my view of myself and my mental health, and how that kind of turned all of that spirally type feeling and behavior that I was having, kind of turned it around, honestly, and made things a little less dark. Hiking was kind of like the light at the end of the tunnel, as it were.
So with the help of the Trans Catalina Trail, hiking became a light for Sydney.
I tell everybody it's the best thing that ever happened to me, and I'm not joking when I say that. That sounds kind of crazy.
That kind of crazy thing, it isn't through hiking. It's her diagnosis of type 2 diabetes, just 10 months after that first Trans Catalina hike.
I swear, it is the best thing that ever happened to me, because at the time, I was in such a weird place. So the first trip on the Trans Catalina Trail gave me two great takeaways. I can do hard things and I love my body. Now that kind of led me to paddleboarding, which led me to a really long paddle, which led me to this diabetes diagnosis. So when I got diagnosed, it was serious enough to where it really made me like take a good hard look at myself and what I had been doing and the choices I had been making and make some different choices. It wasn't that serious of a diagnosis where it just completely derailed my life. It was like just enough of a kick in the butt that I needed to really get it together and make some big decisions on how to change my life and live it the way I want to live it.
How did you feel when you got the diagnosis? Like you said, you started to feel more comfortable in your body, but how did you feel in your body in that moment?
Well, when I got the diagnosis, I was picking up a friend from the airport. So my first thought was like, don't wreck this car, because I was driving and I took the call while I was driving, which probably wasn't my best move. But when I think about like how I felt in my body in that moment, I was like, clearly my body's been trying to tell me something and I haven't been listening, but now I'm paying attention. You know, I didn't feel betrayed by my body. I didn't feel like, what the hell, body? I thought we were cool. You know, like I was just like curious about how I could start to reverse this, if that was possible, because I didn't want to be defined by the disease. I just wanted to like figure out how I can live better. And that was my biggest priority at the time.
I read on a fairly recent Instagram post that you posted that there were four things that you needed to kind of learn about and manage when you first got your diagnosis. Could you tell me what those things were?
There's four factors that affect your blood sugar, and it's the food you eat, how you move your body, the medicines you take, and how you manage your stress. And so I took on the first three immediately because they gave me a prescription, thanks to the help of a nutritionist and all the classes that they offer at the hospital about being a newly diagnosed diabetic. I learned pretty quickly about like how to change my eating habits, and they told us to move at least 30 minutes a day to get started. And so I took those all right away, and it was the stress, little extra stress bucket that I had to take a good hard look at. And that's kind of what implemented a lot of the changes since my diabetes diagnosis, was really understanding, okay, where does my stress come from? Do I want to continue to have it? And if not, can I change it to get rid of it?
It's, you know, it's funny because it's not that the stress portion of it is surprising. It is like a little surprising that doctors would talk about it, because sometimes it seems like they take such an analytical approach. Like,
right?
This is how you treat it. And stress is one of those, you know, it's a little fuzzier. It's not always as easy to define.
That is very true. And I found that out. I got real intimate with the things that stress me out and how that affects my body. Because like, I have always been aware there are a handful of things I choose to do that cause me stress. My career used to be the biggest source of stress for me. And in recognizing, like, I had an actual metric that I could look at every day. Like, I'd wake up, and I know that my blood sugar needs to be between a certain, like, zone to be considered, air quotes, healthy or good when I wake up in the morning. And so I'd check my blood sugar every morning. I wake up, And if it's in that zone, great. And if it's high or low, then I kind of rattle through those four things. Okay, what did I eat yesterday? Okay, well, I didn't go have a big piece of cake, so I know it wasn't that. Did I move my body? Yes, I went and paddled for 4 hours. I check. Am I taking my medicine? Well, currently, this week, I'm transitioning off of my medication to see how my body responds because I had gotten down to half a pill a day. So check, medication. And then the last one is stress. And so I just started looking at like, okay, what caused me stress yesterday? And is that something I can move toward not having in my life anymore?
That is so hard.
Yeah. It like I say it like it's a piece of cake, but this has been the hardest and most rewarding journey I've ever been on.
So in turning the mirror on herself, Sydney found that a lot of her stress derived from work. She quit the job at the marketing agency and started work at a friend's startup. Not surprisingly, that was also extremely stressful.
Now, it might sound silly to go from a marketing agency to a startup if you're looking to reduce your stress. But I had the best of intentions because I thought if I could do work that was so aligned with what I care about, and in this case, it was a beauty brand that was looking to infiltrate the beauty industry from the inside out and smash everything that exists and replace it with intersectional feminism, empowering women, and reminding women that even though we sell these products, you don't actually need them, but while you're using them, you might as well feel good about it, that kind of thing. I thought that if I could do that kind of work, that it would reduce my stress, because surely the stress that I was feeling around my career was tied to subject matter and not the fact that being a marketing person is incredibly stressful. So I got to the startup and shocker, it was not less stressful. In fact, my blood sugar was through the roof. So I quit that job too with no backup plan. So when we talk about like looking at stress and managing stress and making these choices and all that stuff, like those were the hardest decisions I've ever made, especially quitting that last one, because I was only there for 95 days before I decided to quit. But I was like, if I don't leave, I'm at the risk of reversing all the progress I've made on this disease. So I wouldn't say that these decisions are easy. I would say that they're super, super hard. And right now I don't feel any stress like at all. And my blood sugar has been in the primo zone since I left that job because I'm doing stuff for myself now. Like this project that I'm working on, everything that I'm doing, like my day is mine and I choose how I want to spend my time. And even though it's not currently making any money now, I don't give a shit because I've never been so happy and my health has never been so good.
That project, it's talking about hiking her feelings, but I don't want to get ahead of her story. And I also want to emphasize here that this is a decision that fits Sydney's particular circumstances and needs at the time. She really took a look at herself and her health and made that decision. It's different for everyone. I'd never want to condone quitting your job as a cure-all for stress, and neither would Sydney. In any case, leaving that startup gave Sydney time to return once more to the Trans-Catalina Trail. It had been a year and a half since her first hike, and she had some unfinished business to attend to.
The last section of the trail was like really questionable conditions when we did it the first time, and my body was in a questionable condition, so we just tapped out before the last segment of the trail. So I had some unfinished business on the trail, but also I was like, I don't have anything in my way right now. Like, I don't have a job to go back to. I don't have anything that says that I can't take this for all that this experience could possibly be worth. Because usually after a vacation or after a concert or after some kind of life-changing experience, I have to rush right back to work and I don't have time to absorb and integrate the experience into my life. And this time I was like, I'm just going to go hike this trail. I have no responsibility for the next 5 days except for putting one foot in front of the other and working through whatever comes up. And when I get home, I will take as long as I need to integrate all of the great things that I'm going to learn on this trail because there's nothing standing in my way this time. And that was like the best feeling to go into this trip with. And I think it really set the stage for the developments and the connections that I made and all the things that I overcame on that second trip.
So what did you learn on the trail?
Oh, girl. So.
We'll hear what Sydney learned after this. This episode of She Explores is sponsored by Robinhood, an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptocurrencies, all commission-free. You might be thinking, an investing app on a podcast about the outdoors? Well, I used to work in finance, and I know how complicated investing can seem. There are a lot of gatekeepers that keep you in the dark about how it all works. But Robinhood is about learning by doing, and in an unintimidating way. You can get started with a dollar, so if you're curious about investing, sign up and start learning. I really, really appreciate that they're making investing more accessible with an app that you can use on your laptop and your phone. I recently signed up, and it's really intuitive. I'm excited to learn more as I play around with their software. Robinhood is giving listeners a free stock, like Apple, Ford, or Sprint, to help build your portfolio. Sign up at explorers.robinhood.com. That's explorers.robinhood.com. This episode of She Explores is also brought to you by Outdoor Voices. Outdoor Voices makes high-quality active apparel that take you from gym life to everyday life. Outdoor Voices is some of my favorite active apparel to wear these days. It's beautiful, it's super comfortable, and they design gear for doing things, being active, and having fun. For them, it's more about getting out there than setting a record, which is what She Explores is all about, too. I took my Outdoor Voices apparel on a recent hike up Mount Chocorua in New Hampshire and love how the colors echoed the rolling blue mountains in the distance. I also often wear my Outdoor Voices two-tone leggings and tank while I'm standing at my desk as a reminder to get moving later in the day. It's easy to forget when you're really into something. And they host events across the U.S. to keep you doing things and meeting new people. For 20% off your first order of $100 or more, visit outdoorvoices.com/SheExplores and enter promo code SheExplores at checkout. That's SheExplores with no space. They also offer free shipping and hassle-free returns. That's outdoorvoices.com/SheExplores. Enter code SheExplores at checkout for 20% off your first order of $100 or more. We're back.
On my second trip on the Trans-Catalina Trail, it was really the connection of this mind and body thing. So I mentioned that the first time that I did this trail was the hardest thing that I've ever done physically. Going into this second trail, I knew that the only things that were different was that I've lost 60 pounds since the last time I did it, probably more than 60 pounds. I've lost 60 pounds since my diabetes diagnosis last year, probably more weight than that because I was heavier when I hiked the trail the first time. So at least 60 pounds down since the first time I hiked this trail. And in the time between when I quit my job and before we started this trail, I realized that in times of stress, I discovered that instead of eating or drinking my feelings, which was my typical coping mechanism for the last God knows how many years, I had replaced that with hiking my feelings. So when we went to the trail, I was like, okay, the last one was the hardest thing I've ever done physically. What is possible here? And so the second time on the trail was the hardest thing I've ever done emotionally, ever, ever in my life.
It started on the first day. Sydney was on a rest stop by a playground at the trail, and she noted something unusual about herself.
I'm standing in front of like 20, 25 people filling out my water bottle. And I realized, like I looked down at myself and I realized that for the first time in my entire life, I'm standing there in a sports bra, my trekking tights, and my hiking boots and no shirt. And I'm not like running to go cover up because like for the past every year prior to that moment, I don't walk around without a shirt on. It's just not something I do, especially when I was overweight. Like I was convinced that people would die if they saw me in a swimsuit in public. It was a thing. And in that moment, I was like, oh my God, I'm not self-conscious about my body. Like I felt lighter. I felt beautiful, and I was just sitting there on this bench, and I was like, okay, this is going to be something real magic. I can feel it.
That magic, it continued. She ditched her deodorant, or as she told me, embraced her stink. She started letting go of some of the expectations others had had on her, or negative things that they put on her. She felt stronger on the trail for it.
we have two choices for the final leg of this tour. We haven't been to the last campground yet, because the last time, this is where our trip ended, was at Two Harbors. And so there's two ways you can get to the last campground. You can take the easy route around the side, or you can take the hard route up. And the hard route up is like the same elevation gain as the first day, that up and down Five Peaks, except it's just one straight shot of elevation gain with no switchbacks. And then the route down from that elevation is a pretty like semi-technical downhill where you just want to be super sure of where you're stepping, because it's like loose, gravelly dirt stuff. And it's pretty steep, so you like want to sidestep it a little bit so you don't go sliding down the mountain. So I'm like charging up the top, and I'm saying every negative thing that anybody's ever said to me ever, reframing it, telling myself that it's not true, and then tossing it out of my head. So I'm saying things to myself that like nobody said to me. Well, that people have always said to me, honestly. But it was just like this soundtrack in my head. And I'm like charging up this mountain. I'm like, you're too fat. You're too short. You're too smart for your own good. The rest of you is too much. You're too young. You're too old. You know, just like going through all these things that we internalize as women. And I'm just like, you know what? That's not true. I'm not too short. Because if I was too short, then, you know, like, and I'm like, short people don't have to duck in doorways. Yeah, I'm not too short. You know, like just really hyping myself up. And I get to the top of this mountain, and it's the tallest point on the island. And I'm like, I feel free. Like, I've gone, I've done this, I've taken every negative thing that's ever been said to me ever that wasn't ever true, but I internalized as my truth that I've been carrying with me for the last 30 years, and I just like told myself that it wasn't true, and I proved myself wrong, and I released those thoughts, and I get to the top, and I'm like, I am floating up here. And on the way down, I was like, taking my time, watching my step as recommended. And I'm like, when was the last time I felt this good, honestly? Like, when was the last time I felt this good in this body? When was the last time I felt this good spiritually? When? I'm seeking as I'm, like, trying not to slide down the mountain and take out my husband. And I'm stopping for a second, and it hits me. And I'm like, the last time I felt this good was right before I was raped 12 years ago. And I hadn't ever thought about that. I hadn't ever connected those dots before. And then suddenly, like, all the cylinders in my brain are firing, every single one. And I was just like, what does this mean for me? Like, I just, in that moment, like, I felt even more free than I had before. And so we're getting down, like, we're headed down to Parsons, and I'm like, yo, husband, when we get down here, I'm gonna walk into the ocean all the way naked, because I love this body. And I want photos proving that I love this body. Will you be my cameraman? And he was like, hell yeah, I'll be your cameraman. And then I went in the ocean and I had like my little rebirth ceremony. On that trail, like I was releasing the weight of expectations that are placed on women from the second we can hear words and from the second we can talk to ourselves. Because I've had this soundtrack in my mind for forever that's been telling me I'm not enough, I'm too much of this, I'm not enough of this, you know, all the things that we hear and we internalize, and I was gone. And the first thing was the hardest thing I've ever done physically. The second one was the hardest thing I've ever done emotionally. And put the two together, and I realized that, like, once I started addressing my mental health and started healing my old trauma, my body started to take care of itself. The weight started melting off. My blood sugar got better. Like, yeah, I was taking my medicine. I was exercising. I was doing all this. But like in nature, where there's not a million different Instagram posts flying in front of my face, where there's not the news in the background, magazines telling me I don't have the right body, like out in nature, disconnected, no device in my hand, left alone only with my thoughts, I was like, this is how we heal our bodies. Oh my God. It was so abundantly clear that the second I spent some time outside and away from all the crap that is just pounded into our brains from every angle, I was like, I felt free and whole and beautiful and wonderful. And I was able to make decisions out of love for myself instead of the fear of being fat. Like, that love versus fear thing is so real and so powerful.
You know, I hear your story, and I do think that you're very fortunate in certain ways that, you know, when you had this realization about your trauma, that it wasn't debilitating, it was freeing.
Yeah, and it was a long journey to get to that place. Like, it took me 12 years of holding that secret all by myself and 80 plus miles walking back and forth across an island to get to the point where I connected those dots. Like, it's not easy work to do. And I would 100% recommend that if anybody listening has suffered anything remotely close to that, that they get help from somebody who is a professional as soon as possible. Because I didn't. And I walked through life with this invisible backpack full of my own trauma and some stuff that some other people had put in there for me that wasn't mine for decades. And I didn't know I had it until I got on that trail. And like, it started to make sense, because at that first stop at that playground, when I was in front of that REI group and I felt a little bit lighter, the trauma that I was addressing was my body image stuff. At the top of that other mountain, after I had been my own hype man all the way up this mountain with no switchbacks, I had been lighter because I was dealing with that negative soundtrack in my head. Same thing at the top of the next peak, after I had said to myself all of the negative things that anybody had ever said to me ever and released it. I'm like bringing this trauma to the light. And as I bring it to the light, it's not so scary. And I can make decisions on how I want to handle it. I mean, it's not easy at all. Yeah. And I am very, very fortunate that realization, you're 100% right, Gail. I am so lucky that in that moment on that mountain, I had the ability to see that as a positive thing and connect dots in a positive way, as opposed to just having that completely derail my life, because it very easily could have gone the other way if I wasn't in the right mindset.
Yeah. Why do you think you and other women can bury that type of trauma and those emotions that come along with it?
I think for me, I mean, I didn't know better, honestly. Like, between rape culture and slut shaming and bullying and everything else, I honestly, when it first happened, I thought that because I didn't fight back, that I asked for it. And I thought that because I had said no the night before and I woke up with someone on top of me the next day, that, well, maybe consent has an expiration date and maybe I just didn't re-up it in time to avoid this violence that was perpetrated against my body. So I think the most important thing of all of this is to just get help, because like, I didn't have that. I didn't know. So, I mean, I didn't know how to fight back. I wasn't ever taught that. And so a lot of this journey has been me discovering why I reacted in the way I did, not to put blame on myself, but just to understand why I handled the situation. And I did, like, what kind of resources can I help create to help prevent anyone from ever going through what I went through? Because if I had learned how to fight back, it might've been a different situation. But this person was also somebody that I thought could like potentially kill me if I tried to fight back. So I had to make a very quick choice in the moment. How do I want to handle this? Do I want to potentially die and wake up everybody in this house and have them see me getting abused? Or do I just want to kind of like be quiet and hope that I survive this? I went with number two, and yeah, it could have gone way worse, but I was fortunate. As much as I hate to say, consider myself fortunate that I didn't die when I was abused, I was. Not everybody's so lucky. There's lots of women who don't survive.
Oh, it's also awful.
It's terrible. and we're doing nobody is doing anybody any favors by not talking about this stuff either. Like, if there's one thing I can get out of the journey I'm about to embark on, if I can get one person to feel comfortable to talk about their story and to own what happened to them and to not be ashamed of it and to realize that it wasn't their fault and feel empowered from that place, then call it a success. Like, that's the mission, right? Like, I want to prevent this from happening to anybody else. And if that's only one person, then I win.
You know, I was going to ask you what your mission for these talks, what your mission is. So you answered that for me.
it's multi-part, right? Like, my story is, like, diabetes is a big part of it. The assault is a big part of it. But those are just two parts of it. And it's not the whole story. And I didn't let either one of those things define me. I just own them. Like, I, for a long time, I didn't ever own it. I didn't even address it. Like, I just completely shoved it all the way down to the very, very bottom of that invisible backpack full of my trauma. I was just like, no, we can't see that. Man, I just, it's the assault piece. I want folks to feel comfortable talking about that. Cause I mean, like the fact that I was with my husband, who I love more than anything in the world, I chose to spend the rest of my life with him. He is my adventure buddy, my best friend, my coach, my partner in everything. If it took me 7 years to feel comfortable enough to tell him, and he was the first person I told, the thing that I think about the most is this, is that, like, how many women are sitting with this, with these secrets that don't need to be secrets because it's not our fault. We didn't ask for this. How many women are sitting with that, and how many women have had their lives derailed because of it? Because, like, when we talk about my mission is a lot of things, but, like, one of my driving whys is I think about the loss of female potential, well, human potential, because I'm not going to deny that there are men that are abused sexually. Like, that is abundantly clear. In this particular case, I'm talking about females. And I'm talking about myself, because one thing that I connected on the trail, and I was like, oh my God, like, this is a big chunk of why I'm doing this. I realized after my assault, the semester after it happened, I was in chemistry and I was failing, so I dropped the class. Now, I was pre-med and I was going to be a head and neck surgeon and I was going to be a cancer remover, just like the doctor who saved my mom's life when she had cancer my senior year of high school. So I was smart. I was driven. I had everything going and I had a plan. And then I was assaulted. And when I failed chemistry, I thought it was because I was stupid. Looking back, it's very obvious that the reason I failed was because I had this unresolved trauma that I wasn't willing to look at or deal with. And my body and my brain were just like, well, fine. You figure it out then. Like, we'll protect you. And my body started holding on the weight and I turned to food and alcohol and I packed on pounds to protect myself from further violence. But at first it was like, okay, if you're not going to deal with it, then we're just going to send you signals that your life is out of control. And maybe at some point you'll start paying attention. Like, I could have been a doctor, and like, and I think, like, I would not change my path for the world. The one I'm walking is absolutely spectacular and I love it. However, I shouldn't have to save lives by talking about my assault. I should be saving lives on the operating table right now. And I think about all the women who might not have even had the fortunate circumstance to have their lives derailed and just in a different direction and not completely off course. Like, I'm lucky that it was just like, oh, well, I switched my major, you know. It could have been way worse. But I think about this female potential thing. How many women are out there with dreams that are unrecognized because this happened to them, they haven't dealt with it, and they don't know why their lives are chaos. Like, that's what I'm trying to get to the bottom of, because this is outrageous and the outdoors can help fix it. Because that, honestly, that soundtrack in the back of my mind, when that was gone, I was able to, like, clear away all the other crap and really get to the root of this problem that I had been dealing with for 12 years. And I couldn't do that in the gym. I couldn't do that in my house. I couldn't do it on my paddleboard. Like, the trail was where it happened, and I didn't have anything else in my way to be able to address that trauma, finally.
Yeah, I love that idea of using something like hiking or outdoor activities to coax out and help you work through your feelings, and, like, in certain ways, a gentler way than numbing them, you know, through food or alcohol. But it sounds like it was a coaxing, and it wasn't like an overnight, like, switch that turned on. It makes it so much easier to cope that way.
Yeah, I like the way you phrase that, coaxing, because that's absolutely what it was. It was like, hey, I'll give you just a little taste of this trail. Like, if I clear out, hey, body, if I clear out all this mental garbage, can we, like, have a real chat and, like, get to the bottom of this stuff?
from what I'm hearing, it sounds like it's an opportunity for people to, anyone really who listens to you speak and tell your story, to look back and think about the, you know, inflection points, you know, in your life that may have steered you in a different direction. And that's a really valuable thing. Like, from hearing you, it sounds like you're way more awake to the moments in your life that are impactful now, and you want that for other people.
Yeah, I've always considered myself pretty self-aware, and I think that looking in instead of looking out in general is a good first step for anything.
Definitely.
Sydney is sharing her story in a series of talks at REI stores in Southern California.
I'm doing a speaking and hiking tour with REI. Our dates in October are Burbank on the 12th, Tustin on the 19th, and Woodland Hills on the 26th, and those are all in the LA metro area. And what we're doing is we're testing this format where I speak at 7 p.m. on Friday night, and then the next morning we take it to the trail and we go hike it out.
Those hikes the morning after the talk, they aren't affiliated with REI. Sydney is just so excited to get to know you and your stories, and she knows that the best way to do that is with a hike. Stay in touch with Sydney and learn more about upcoming tour dates by following along on @hikingmyfeelings on Instagram and hikingmyfeelings.com. As always, we'll link both in the show notes and on the episode landing page. Have you heard the news about our Women on the Road gathering in Taos, New Mexico? We're camping out for 2 nights at Hotel Luna Mystica. It's an opportunity for women and non-binary listeners of She Explores and listeners of Women on the Road to all meet in person, share stories, and create new ones. We'll be making an episode of Women on the Road while we're there, hosting workshops about life on the road and the outdoors, and just generally having fun. Tickets are listed on the show notes and this episode landing page. We'll be donating a portion of proceeds to Heart of Taos, a local nonprofit. If you don't have a camper or van to sleep in, not to worry. Tent campers are really welcome too. And if you want a taste of the van life experience, we're partnering with Escape Camper Vans to offer you 20% off a rental. Use code WOMEN20 at checkout. We hope to see you there. Thank you to our sponsors, BetterHelp, UBiome, Outdoor Voices, and Robinhood. All links and codes are listed on our show notes and the episode landing page. If you enjoy She Explores, please take the time to review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. It'll help other people find us. Even better, share She Explores with a friend. We're on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, so make sure to tag us so we'll see it. And if you want to stay in touch between episodes, join us in our She Explores podcast Facebook group. It's my favorite way to keep up with everything that's going on in your lives. And when I have a question about anything in the outdoors, I know where to go. In fact, I met Sydney through this Facebook group. Music is by Kay Angle, Lee Rosever, and Josh Woodward via the Free Music Archive using a Creative Commons Attributions license. Music is also by Great Lands. She Explores will be taking next week off. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Until then, have fun out there.